This is The Guardian.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. So now a two-horse race for the Premier League title with both Arsenal and Manchester City winning on Sunday. Arsenal were ruthless at Spurs, 3-0 up at half-time without doing that much. Spurs fought back, but in vain. Is there an Ange plan B that involves defending set pieces? Manchester City rode their luck and Chris Wood's square football boots on the so-so dry City ground turf, turning to their now goal-scoring regulars of Haaland and Guardiola. Any hope Liverpool had is surely gone now after dropping 2 points at West Ham. They did enough to win, but didn't, even if Cody Gakpo should have been allowed to slot that one in, all while Mo Salah and Jurgen Klopp rowed on the touchline. Elsewhere, Sheffield United are down. To steal a line from Irish satirist Barry Glendening, the big question is, what does that mean for eating sandwiches in the presence of Chris Wilder? Burnley get the penalty Wolves should have got 8 months ago at Old Trafford, and Jeffrey Schlupp hits a good one. EFL times as Cambridge survive and Leeds implode. Heartbreak for Chelsea women in the Champions League. With Vera announcing she's leaving at the end of the season, will the rest of the cast down tools? All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jordan Jarrett-Bryan, welcome.
Morning, mate.
Hello, Barry Glendening.
Hi, Max.
Hello, Jonathan Wilson.
Morning, how you doing?
I'm very good then. So the top of the Premier League, Arsenal, 80 points with 3 games to go. Manchester City, 79 points with 4 games to go. Liverpool, now a little way away, 75 points with 3 games to go. Let's start at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I thought this was an odd football match. I thought Spurs were quite good in the first half and found themselves 3-0 down. Obviously, Arsenal, as I said, were totally ruthless. I'm clearly too biased. Jordan, you are too biased. Let's get the sensible views first. Wilson and Baz. Wilson, start with you. What did you make of it?
Well, I was watching it in the Nottingham Forest press room, sat next to Phil Brown. So I'm not sure how sane my views are going to be either. But Phil Brown's view definitely was, it's too easy. It's just too easy. And I think that was it. The Tottenham did play fine, but Vicario, people have worked out, does not like in-swinging corners. You can really pressure him. And even the break that led to the second Arsenal goal, there was a sense it's all just a bit simple. And you know Saka's going to come back onto his left foot. So, and okay, I know Ben Davis has charged across. Maybe his momentum means that he's going too quickly to stop. But it all just seemed, you could see that happening from miles away, that Saka was just going to wait for him, turn inside. I'd say that's a really good finish, but it all did just feel a bit simple, and it didn't feel like a 3-0 game at half time. And then there was that classic Arsenal thing of, as soon as you get under a little bit of pressure, they do wobble quite badly. And in the end, yeah, they held out, they got away with it. But it was, I don't know, clearly there were celebrations at the end, and I get that, and that's reasonable. But given the position they're in at half time, I'd still be, I mean, it's too late in the season for it to matter, really, I guess. But you'd still be worried about their capacity to see games out, their capacity not to be derailed when things do go against them.
Yeah, I sort of largely agree with that. I thought the first half, Spurs didn't do a whole lot wrong and then found themselves 3-0 down. Should they have had a penalty instead of Arsenal getting that second goal through Saka? Probably. But it wasn't given for the Trossard trip on, I don't think it was an intentional trip, but it was definitely a trip on Kulusevski. Then when Arsenal looked to have the match won, because they're better at defending set pieces and better at taking set pieces than Spurs are. They give away two really silly goals. Raya gives that goal to Christian Romero, and then Declan Rice, for reasons best known to himself, kicks Ben Davies in the bollocks. There's no other way around to dress it up in the penalty area. And weirdly, that penalty was only given after a touchline monitor review, and despite the fact that the referee, Michael Oliver, had a very clear view. I think it was like that episode of Father Ted where Ted kicks Bishop Brennan up the arse and then just denies he did it, and Bishop Brennan starts to doubt himself.
We had a question exactly on that. Yes, Wilson?
Declan Rice did no denying at all. I don't know if you've seen that camera from behind the goal. Declan Rice's body language is, oh, shit, I've just given away a stupid penalty. Yeah. And he barely bothers to move because he obviously knows it's going to be checked. But I wonder, I mean, I've found as I've got older, if somebody shoves a menu or something too close to me, I just can't see it. I've got to sort of lean back and my eyes now can't focus if something's too close. And I wonder if that started to happen with Michael Oliver, that if incidents happen too close to him, he just can't focus.
Oh, he's nearsighted. That's the problem.
It develops with age, I think, isn't it? Right. I think your eyes muscles relax with age.
So actually, for incidents really close, he needs to pick out some little reading glasses, Michael Oliver, during the game. And then it's totally fine.
No, I'd be more of the view that Michael Oliver was thinking, that cannot just have happened. I must have imagined that. So I think if Declan Rice had just emphatically denied doing it, he might have got away with it.
The thing is, at the end of it all, Jordan, like, they held on, right? And they've done what they needed to do. And they were, I guess what you don't know is, it did feel easy for Arsenal, even if Tottenham were playing well in that first half. And had it been harder, you sort of got the sense that Arsenal weren't given everything. In a sense, they could have stepped it up another level, perhaps.
Yeah, for sure. There was definitely another gear to go if required. I think it's important to mention the context of the week. This game within the context of the week, it was a very, very difficult, potentially season-ending week for Arsenal to come through that with a win at Wolves, a win at Chelsea, and a win at Spurs. I think it shows a lot about how this Arsenal team have improved. I personally wanted a clean sheet as well. So I just think it would have been a nice round off to the week to kind of come through those three games with 9 points and no goals conceded. But yeah, I think Spurs actually weren't that bad in the first half. We were just clinical and ruthless. I disagree slightly with Jonathan Wilson, who mentions that the pressure maybe was what caused Arsenal to slightly mini implode towards the end. I think in previous years, a little bit of pressure would make this team capitulate. I just think it was David Raya being too comfortable. I just think he was too comfortable and he was bored. And that led to that particular to error. Go on, Wilson.
No, but my point is that the Brentford game, the Bayern game, very similar. Arsenal are totally cruising. Then a goalkeeping error leads to them conceding. And then they can't get back to that level of control. Panic sets in. The Brentford game, they eventually did get back together the last sort of 15 minutes. The Bayern game, again, they sort of got it back the last 10, 15 minutes, but they conceded two in that time. You know, conceded an extra goal in that time. The difference was this time, we were 3-0 up when it happened rather than 1-0 up. And I think it's similar to the Fulham game they lost, similar to the West Ham game they lost, that one little thing goes wrong and the whole rhythm is knocked out of kilter. And they're not good at riding through adversity. I think when things are going well, they're exceptional. But I think the failing that is still there, and you can even trace it back to the Liverpool or West Ham games last season, one little glitch, even when they're in control of a game, sends them off. And that's not the sign of a team who are going to be relentless champions.
I think that's fair comment. But I think it was this one was about obviously winning the game and kind of getting through and putting the pressure onto City. Again, I slightly disagree with Barry because I found the analysis last night or Match of the Day where Ashley Williams and Shay Given were saying it was a penalty. I was stunned. I don't think it's a penalty at all. Where I've got sympathy for Spurs is the goal that was disallowed. I'm not convinced that was definitely offside. I think there's an argument that he's just in line. I've got a bit of sympathy there with Spurs. But just a couple of other slightly wider things. That's now 4 points against Spurs, 4 points against Chelsea, 4 points against Liverpool, 4 points against City, and I'm hoping 6 points against Manchester United. And it just exemplifies more so that if Arsenal do finish second, which I think they will, again, just how good this City team is, because to get that amount of points against your big six rivals and still, you know, come second, I know that it's not just big six league, shows just how unlucky they are. And just finally as well, set pieces. I remember the first manager I heard talking about the importance and the value of set pieces being Sam Allardyce back in the day at Bolton. And I'm not saying he's the first person to invent the idea of focusing on set pieces, but Arsenal's set piece record this season has been a massive part as to why they are in this title race. I just wonder if other clubs now will spend as much money in transfer fees as they do on their set piece coach, because it's clearly, if you can add 10, 15 goals to your tally with set pieces, that's going to make a significant difference as well.
Yeah, it is interesting that Arsenal played three games while Spurs were sort of kicking their heels waiting for this one. And Ange Postecoglou knows how good Arsenal are at corners, taking corners. He knows how bad his own team are at defending them. He knows his goalkeeper gets bullied at corners. And yet, did nothing, or appeared to do nothing, to rectify the situation. I know these set-piece gurus, I think we're obliged to call them, are quite the fad at the moment. But what Arsenal are doing, it's not really rocket science. It's, you know, get a load of big blokes at the back post, and then as this in-swinging, well-hit in-swinging corner, put Ben White on the keeper, and as this in-swinging corner is being sent in, everyone swarms to the near post, and someone gets their head to it, whether it's Kai Havertz or Pierre-Emil Højbjerg putting the ball into his own net. And why aren't Spurs making more of an effort to stop their goalkeeper being bullied? They had time to work on it.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Look, Arsenal have scored 16 goals from corners in the Premier League this season. That's the most by a team in a single campaign since West Brom under Tony Pulis in 2016-17. But isn't that the point, Wilson, that it's maybe you've got a plan for your corners, right? You're going to mark zonally, which is what Tottenham are doing. But then once Arsenal have got this thing where they all come from behind and they, you know, so Tottenham players don't know where they're coming from, you have to change in the game, right? You have to say, look, we've got to do something different because this isn't working. Or as everyone else has said, just get somebody standing in between Vicario and Ben White, and to Ben White, what Ben White's doing to Vicario, which is kind of lean on him and just push him out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the problems with zonal marking set pieces, that broadly speaking, that does work, but you probably need a man-to-man element as well. So it happened in the Forest City game as well, that the Guardiola goal, he runs off Morgan Gibbs-White, and because of that, he's moving at pace when he gets to Murillo, and so Murillo just can't get the height, can't get the power to beat him in the air. I mean, maybe he wouldn't have done anyway, but, and so you sort of think, well, that's, I don't think it's as simple as saying one is right and one is wrong, but it's clearly an issue with zonal marking at set pieces, that once a player gets a run, and you're static, what can you do against it? And again, Forrest, maybe Nico Williams is off the pitch because you're getting treatment. Maybe if they had that extra man there, they would have had an extra body and it wouldn't have happened. I don't know. But it did occur to me in that game of, this is a really obvious flaw and I don't really know what you're meant to do against it other than have somebody man-to-man on Gradiol, giving him a bit of a nudge as he jumps.
Yeah, and actually it's interesting. It's interesting you talk about Forrest there, because you sort of think, Jordan, with set pieces, right? Obviously, Man City will have better players than Nottingham Forest, right? Arsenal probably have better players than Tottenham. It's obviously slightly different. But you would think set pieces is something that, like, anybody could be good at. Like, that is not, like incredible, natural £100 million player talent. Okay, the delivery matters, but you should have somebody with half-decent delivery. Like, all the clubs should be good at set pieces. That's where, like, Tony Pulis and West Brom, they go, right, this is something we can be good at.
Yeah.
Because we have limited options. Like, it's almost a surprise that City and Arsenal are the best two teams, I think, in that regard.
And that was the point, I think, that Paul Merson made on Sky yesterday, that should be the leveler, right? That shouldn't really matter who's got the biggest budget, who's got the best players, the best coach. You know, if you're down at the bottom of the table, the one thing that you can be as good at as Manchester City is from set pieces. So I guess in that sense, yeah, you're right. But there must be a reason why a lot of clubs, Liverpool, I think, do as well. Most clubs now do employ a set-piece specialist, because there must be something extra that those guys are bringing to the table that just the idea of, well, mark your man, you know, block this guy out of the way, brings to the tactics as well. Just briefly on the Gvardiol goal, if we've moved on to that Nottingham Forest game, I thought it was one of my best goals of the weekend. That goal was really, really good. He's gone at least a yard and a half past the post. And to get that connection and that header on, I thought it was a brilliant goal from Gvardiol that wasn't really discussed much in the analysis. And maybe it's because the wrong person was marking him because Williams was off the pitch. I don't know, but just wanted to flag that goal.
Yeah, it's a good point. Just to say on Spurs Arsenal, I'm absolutely here for how grumpy Ange is when he has to talk to the media after a defeat. He imagine he's got how many interviews he's got to do, and he has no interest in being there. He's just so furious about the whole thing. So yeah, look, City won 2-0 at Forest after that, after Arsenal put the pressure on. And actually, Barry, you feel Forest might have left one out here. They could have done something in this game. They had the chances.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that game will give hope to Arsenal, I think, because with better finishing, Forest could certainly have drawn and might conceivably have won the game. Chris Wood had a day to forget. He missed two sitters, another sort of half-decent chance that he might have scored on one of his better days. Just looking at my notes here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Forest had more chances than City. Played very well, but still lost because City were more clinical than they were. It does show that City are kind of fallible, because on another day they could have only drawn or even lost.
Yeah, Forest's XG of 1.27 at half time, the most by any side in the first half of a game against Manchester City this season. Lots of questions along these lines. Sal saying, do we know who Chris Wood supports and are Forest considering their options? Dan, you know, when will Nottingham Forest release a statement accusing Chris Wood of being a Luton fan? Patrick, what did Stuart Atwell slip Chris Wood before the match to mean he would miss so many chances? He just had one of those days. He's actually had a really good season. I liked Wilson Pep saying, we were so lucky, the pitch was so dry, and that's why they missed those chances.
They were lucky. I mean, but I sort of feel this a lot about City this season. There's very few games where I think they've been that impressive, and yet they've got 31 games unbeaten now. Of course, it helped. I thought it was quite punchy from the PGMOL that the refereeing team was Nick Owen, Kevis Matthews, and the ghost of Eric Morecambe. but I don't think it was. I don't think it was any sort of VAR controversies in that game. But I have to say, I didn't notice the pitch being dry. That was something that. The pitch can't have been dry. It absolutely hammered down. I went to Nottingham early to see a mate for lunch, and it must have rained for at least 4 or 5 hours when I was in Nottingham. So that pitch must have the best drainage in the history of drainage if that pitch was dry. So yeah, I thought that was nonsense. And I don't know, the fact he had that weird rant about kickoff times and having to play too many games. Yeah, there's an easy way around that. Lose some matches and then you won't be in these competitions. But is he getting under a bit of pressure? I don't know. Because you look at it now, and Arsenal's three remaining games, Bournemouth, United away, Everton. Yeah. City's look a little bit harder because they've got to go to Fulham and they've got to go to Spurs. I mean, West Ham at home is pretty straightforward. But even Wolves at home next week, I don't think is that easy. Wolves beat them at Molineux earlier in the season. So... I still think City will win the title, but they're running now that Arsenal have got through this last week, as Jordan mentioned, those three games, I think City's running looks a little bit tougher.
Yeah, look, it's worth saying that Arsenal have a goal difference is 7 better than City's. So you think if City draw one game and then they all win their games, depending on, you know, City really turning it on, you'd imagine that the title will be Arsenal. The question is, Jordan, you know, are you looking at Tottenham thinking, hang on, let's say Villa are clear in fourth, Tottenham have got fifth, they're playing City
under 17s, and
you know, like what would you do? Like, it's a really interesting situation actually, because you can't imagine Postecoglou would, you know, he wouldn't go into it that way, but can you imagine everyone in the stadium going, come on, come on.
Yeah, it could be cool.
Arsenal, you are now desperate, right, for Tottenham to still be challenging some when that game comes.
Yeah, we need them to be competitive because we need them to want to win or need to win that game against Manchester City. My fear is that top four slot is slipping away from them week by week. because of how good Villa are playing at the moment. But no, you know, things can change within a week or so. Villa drop points, so yeah, the longer that top four race is competitive, the better it is for Arsenal. Just two quick points on this game as well. We often talk about players maybe being like your Cameron Jeromes or your Dave Nugents being too good for the Championship but not good enough for the Prem. I wonder if teams like Forest are the club that kind of, and Burnley are like the equivalent of that, in that they're not quite good enough to be in the Prem, but maybe too good for the Championship. And if Forest go down, I could see them just walking it next year. And my other point was going to be about, again, Paul Mercer made an interesting point about Kevin De Bruyne's passing in this game, and how he's the best 5-yard passer in the world. And I think we tend to think of the best players in the world being great because they can make 60-yard diags or defence-splitting passes. But he made the correct point, again, that just being consistently good at passing the ball 5 yards with the right amount of power, with the right amount of oomph behind it, is a skill in of itself. And De Bruyne is very consistent at that. I just thought it was a very good bit of analysis from Paul Merson.
Nothing annoys me more than when a centre-back is passing it to another centre-back and it's just a little bit behind them, or it's just slowing down the play. Like, those things really do matter. If you're really focused and the ball isn't exactly the right place for the, you know, the guy you're passing it to then have the options beyond that. And you're right. I mean, De Bruyne is obviously effortless at that. Liverpool probably out of it now. 2-2 at the London Stadium. Barry, they really should have won this game, right? They missed so many chances. And if they win, you sort of think, okay, they've still got a little chance, but it's done now, we feel.
Yeah, you'd imagine so. And if it was, like Chris Wood, just a bad day at the office, you could say, you know, fair enough, these things happen. But this has been happening to Liverpool for quite some time now. Very good forward players squandering chances, and it's costing them points. It costs them again here. I think West Ham were well worth their point, having said that. And I mean, the first half of this game was pretty dire, and it was sort of lit up by the Jarrod Bowen goal not too long before half time. But it was very pedestrian and dull. And both teams, even though they both, you know, they both have something to play for, but they're kind of relying on other people to mess up. So it did have a kind of end of season, we've both thrown in the towel kind of vibe about it. Then West Ham took the lead. I would imagine Jurgen Klopp absolutely gave Liverpool's players a rocket at half time. And they upped their game considerably in the second half. The two goals they scored were quite scruffy. That Robertson sort of shot through it.
Oh, I thought he took it well. I thought that was really well taken.
Yeah, maybe I'm being unkind. I thought he just took it because there was no other option available to him, and it sort of went through a thicket of legs. And then the own goal, I mean, who gets that goal? I don't know who got it in the end, but...
Every West Ham player since the 80s. Yeah. Tony Cotty got a touch on it, Steve Potts, etc.
Yeah, we'll give it to Tim Breaker.
Fine.
Harvey Elliott hit the woodwork. Then you had that Cody Gakpo incident with Alphonse Areola. It was definitely Alphonse Areola.
correct.
You know, where Anthony Taylor made an absolute tit of himself, really. I mean, if Gakpo had scored there, there would have been no reason to disallow the goal. Yeah, Harvey Elliott hit the woodwork twice. I think Liverpool have now hit the woodwork 24 times in the Premier League this season. So, yeah, they should have won, but they didn't, and it was their own fault.
Darwin Nunes, certainly 23 from him, I'd imagine, of that 24. Yeah, I mean, the Gakpo thing is weird, isn't it, Wilson? And, you know, Anthony Taylor's kind of, I better do something now, I'll call the physio on, I found it quite entertaining, but, like, really, it's a bit like the Arsenal penalty against Bayern, isn't it? It's one of those where I kind of get how somebody could argue this isn't how we want goals to be scored, but also it is exactly how we want goals to be scored.
I mean, with the Arsenal one, I think it's slightly different in that you know, Gabriel isn't cheating there. You know, he thinks the goal kick hasn't been taken, and nobody's gaining an advantage from it. So just let it go. Here it's a little bit different in that I don't really understand what was going on. Where I give Anthony Taylor credit is he had the presence of mind to blow his whistle before Gakpo got to the ball, so that there wasn't an issue that he'd put the ball in the net. There wasn't a goal to be ruled out.
But isn't that the big mistake, that he shouldn't do that? He should just say Areola's lost his concentration and, you know, he said play
on. Was Areola thinking he had a free kick, or was it... I mean, I assume that's what was going on. Areola...
Yeah, maybe.
And again, I think if it's a misunderstanding, I'd be inclined to show sympathy. We all misunderstand things. I'm not sure it should cost you a goal. And, you know, he had collided with the post. There had been sort of two occasions where Anthony Taylor seemed to say, do you want treatment? And maybe he just thought that he'd misunderstood and Areola thought that he was about to get treatment. I think if we don't want goals scored on daft misunderstandings, you know, Liverpool hadn't done anything to deserve a goal there. So I think Anthony Taylor actually kind of gets himself out of the situation pretty well on what's just a, I think, fundamentally a miscommunication between him and Areola, which can happen. So I don't know. I think referees often get things wrong. I think that's an example of a referee actually just being quite sensible and, you know, making sure that no situation occurred.
Well, you convinced me, Wilson, if nobody else.
I also think, and this is a different point, but I think basically referees should only be allowed two types of haircut. So one is to be bald, the other is to have a side parting, and they all should have absolutely blunt names that could be a butcher in the Northwest in the 1960s.
I mean, isn't that what it is?
It's not.
Who can't you have anymore?
Gerald Ashby should never have been allowed to be a referee. But Anthony Taylor and Michael Oliver, they're both good, solid butchers' names, and therefore that's acceptable. And therefore we should support them, whatever the decisions are.
Darren Cann is, you know, making sausages in the back room, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely fine. This crop of referees are pretty good, but we've got to be a little bit careful with it's more of a fancy haircuts than the fancy names.
Well, Roger Milford is definitely more Tory MP than referee.
Exactly. And Roger Milford, you know, if he'd sent Gazza off, Gazza wouldn't have done his knee and the history would have been very different.
Right, there we are. Yeah, I mean, on a slightly serious point, probably be good if there was a little bit more diversity.
Yeah, okay. That is Northerners true.
When we think about it. But, you know, it's worth mentioning Jarrod Bowen, who had a really good game. Scored one, set up one, scored 20 this season. That's a pretty good return. Pushing for the plane. Might not be the most exciting of all those attacking midfielders or sort of wide attackers, but can certainly do a job. And look, we haven't really discussed David Moyes. We have done many times. But Julian Lopetegui spoke to West Ham and has decided to go to AC Milan. You would, wouldn't you? I mean, I think that is sort of the way, you know, if you had the choice of those two, with all due respect, of course, to West Ham. That'll do for part one. Part two will begin with Sheffield United getting relegated.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Thankfully, Jordan in the break said, you didn't mention Klopp and Salah, which was going to be the biggest headline. So look, I did have it. It's all written down in front of me. Yes, thoughts, Jordan?
Oh, I have none. I just thought it was worth, you know, you fucking to the pot.
So look, Jürgen, so Mo Salah's coming on. Jürgen Klopp says something to him. It's a weird time to, like, I don't imagine what he said. I mean, it's obviously pointless to speculate. Just don't be shit today, Mo, or something. You got really riled him up. And then afterwards, Mo Salah sort of walked through the mix zone and said, if I speak, there will be fire. So all quite entertaining. You imagine neither of them will be there next season. But you don't want this to end in a sort of sour way, Jordan?
Yeah, it's looking. I'm a Liverpool fan, so my interest is minimal. But if you were a Liverpool fan, it is quite sad the way it seems to be ending, because you've got these two legendary figures, not only for Liverpool but for the Prem, I guess. And it seems to be a marriage that is ending in a very messy way. But look, we don't know what was actually said. But if we're going to speculate what was said, it feels like Salah was a bit effed off that he was dropped. He's trying to get in the zone to get ready to come on and play. Klopp said something to him that has obviously triggered him.
It's not worth it, Brian.
Well, yeah, it was a little bit of that in there. I'm not sure if it quite needed him to be held back by Nunez there, but visually that doesn't look great on the whole thing. And he has been poor. I mean, Klopp's within his rights to drop Salah on the basis of form. They're out of the title race now, so Klopp may well feel, I can drop you anyway because we're not going to win the league, so I can do what I think is the right thing to do. But yeah, it's not a good look.
Newcastle 5, Sheffield United 1. Sheffield United are relegated. They were actually quite good in this game, Barry, weren't they? The first half especially. Obviously, this was the day they got relegated, but it also wasn't the day they got relegated. They've been relegated because they haven't been very good all season.
Yeah, they've conceded 97 goals in 35 games. They'll probably hit the ton before the end of the season. They've conceded 5 or more in 7 games, and they just haven't been good enough. And we all knew from the start they were going to struggle because they lost several of the players and loanees who helped them to get promotion and didn't replace them with enough quality. Away at Newcastle is always going to be difficult, and despite a good first half where they probably should have been in the lead going in at half time, Brooks smashed the ball wide. I think when scoring looked easier, that would have put them 2-1 up, and then yeah, they capitulated in the second half. And it wasn't that much of a surprise. Newcastle were hugely improved after the break. And Chris Wilder just said, you know, we don't have any leaders out there. We've been bullied. This is, you know, talking about the season as a whole, I think. And I'm pretty unimpressed with the job he's done since coming in, but he did have very limited tools to work with. And it's no surprise that they have been relegated.
Funny feeling that Ben Osborne, the Sheffield United midfielder, listens to the podcast. So go easy on him on his quite funny own goal. But it was the highlight of the game where it was sort of a bit like Gordon Strachan in the Charity Shield. That one sort of caught between his legs, slightly Jimmy Traore. And then just the camera panned him as he just went, oh, fuck off. And I was like, it was absolutely perfect. And it was exactly what anybody should have done in that position.
I think he then went and booted the post in frustration. And I suspect it may have hurt. such was the venom with which he kicked the post. So if you are listening, Ben, commiserations on the relegation. And I hope you didn't hurt your toe.
Yeah, so only Swindon have ever conceded more goals in a single Premier League season. That was 100, 93, 94, and that was a 42-game season. So 3 games to go. If I was a Sheffield United fan, I would want the record. Absolutely. Meanwhile, Newcastle, Wilson, Isaacs is such a brilliant player and has been brilliant. Guimaraes scored in this game as well. And you keep hearing that they're going to have to sell one of these players. And I just don't know which one you would, if you were forced to sell one, which one you would sell.
I mean, I think Isak is exceptional, and I think, you know, Guimaraes has clearly been brilliant for them, and I'm sure would continue to be brilliant for them if they can keep both. But I think he's probably the easier to replace. I think Isak's movement, the quality of his finishing, so it's just one of those players who everything just looks so natural for him. You sort of feel he's nowhere near his ceiling yet. Yeah, I think one is a very good talent, one is an absolutely exceptional talent. So I'd be tempted to keep Isak.
Ryan says, is Matt Ritchie the best lorry driver ever to play in the Premier League? Yeah, this is the news that Matt Ritchie got his HGV license this week. He looked very happy about it in the photo. Eddie Howe, answering in classic Football Manager style, said he's always trying to improve himself, which I really liked. Let's make it sound like that'll really help his channel runs, won't it? Because he can drive a big old lorry.
I'm just wondering, people are saying Newcastle will have to sell one of those players, but I believe the Saudis have a quite expansive portfolio of hotels that they could surely sell to themselves to generate income that would allow them to keep their best players and possibly get more in.
If they did a deal with Eddie Stobart, then Matt Ritchie could be sort of farmed out on loan to haulage. And then Eddie Howe wouldn't have one player he's not selecting that often.
Is Matt Ritchie planning on being a lorry driver after he retires?
I don't know.
No, he's the reason he's got it is because his wife owns horses and this allows him to drive the horses about.
Ah, I see.
Oh, what a disappointing... I just wanted to be a trucker. He wanted to be a late-night trucker and just, you know, text in overnight radio shows. It's Matt on the M1. Play Belinda Carlisle. Right. Anyway, to Old Trafford, Man United 1, Burnley 1. A game, Wilson, where Andre Onana simultaneously kept Manchester United in the game and cost them the win.
Yeah, I mean, that was an absolutely brilliant save. I sort of think now it's harder for saves to stick in the memory in the way they used to, just because with all football being televised, we see more of them. But that's still one of those saves where you see it, you do think, you know, what on earth just happened?
So it's the sort of deflected header, like the shot is in and then Lyle Foster redirects the ball and you think that is in.
Yeah, so he's moving to his right. Lyle Foster then gets his head to it and he has to go to his left. And it's not just that, it's the fact that he manages to get enough sort of power with his wrist to push the ball away. Yeah, I don't think getting a hand to it is the hard bit. Getting a hand to it, I think, I'm not saying that a normal person could do it, but I think a lot of goalkeepers would get a hand to it. It's being able to sort of then flex your wrist enough to sort of punch it out of danger. It's sort of been the story for Onana all season, hasn't it? That he does a lot of very good things. He does a lot of very bad things. He got away with punching a player in the head against Wolves early on, and this time he didn't.
It's an odd cushioned header from Casemiro, Jordan. You know, to set up Onana to punch someone else in the head, isn't it?
Is it odd? I mean, I've seen players before. Kyle Walker's very good at this, like kind of dinking it high enough that there's traffic in the way, but obviously the keeper has the advantage of being able to catch the ball above people's heads. So it wasn't a bizarre header for me.
It wasn't a very good. It wasn't a very good one. I mean, like you know.
Well, as turned out, no. But the idea, I didn't see him do that and think, why are you doing that? Maybe the execution was just a bit off for sure.
Erik ten Hag, Barry, said, we are one of the most dynamic and exciting teams in the Premier League. Who's he now trying to convince? Like, who's he talking to?
They are exciting. I find them an entertaining watch.
Yes.
I mean, I suppose I can kind of understand Erik ten Hag's frustration in that he must think, I can't do right for doing wrong. You know, when we get beaten, I get slaughtered. When we win, I get slaughtered. When we draw, I get slaughtered. Like, what am I supposed to do here? But the fact is, United remain an incredibly easy team to play against. And Burnley should have won this game, I think. And Burnley could really, really regret. They're just throwing points around like confetti. They gave away two easy points, stupid points against Brighton. They lost two stupid points against Everton. I wouldn't say these were stupid points to lose, and a draw at Old Trafford is usually a good result, but I think they should have won this. They were a better side. You know, that's 6 points right there. That would, if they had them in the bank, would put them 4 points ahead of Nottingham Forest and near safety. They may still stay up. People are giving them a chance. They play Forest on the last day of the season. So, you know, in the interests of final day entertainment, here's hoping they're still in with a shout staying up when they play Forest. And it's interesting, everyone's given Burnley a chance of staying up, but nobody seems to be giving Luton a chance. But Luton still have an extra point on the board. So, but Burnley are playing better than Luton at the moment.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, look, Luton lost to Wolves, Wilson, and you do sense, that's exactly right, isn't it? Luton are in a better position than Burnley, but form-wise, they really aren't.
Well, yeah, it just feels like the air's gone out of that balloon. I mean, it's a little bit like, you know, Alan Shearer was saying on Match of the Day that, you know, Salah's got how many goals this season? Of course, he has to start. You sort of think, have you seen him since the Cup of Nations? He's been absolutely terrible. Like, form is a thing. And yeah, Luton, I don't know if it's weariness, if it's, you know, confidence of, or you have a loss of confidence caused by being in so many games and and not getting wins from them.
They have had a lot of injuries.
Yeah, that Wolves game was one of those games where you think, well, Wolves aren't on a great run. They've got nothing to play for. This is a chance for Luton. And to sort of slightly meekly go 2-0 down, okay, there's a bit of a fight back at the end. They have the air of a doomed side. And all the conspiracies in the world probably aren't going to save them.
So Burnley 24 points, Luton 25, Forest 26. They've all played 35. Forest fixture list is Sheffield United away, Chelsea at home, Burnley away. Luton have Everton at home, West Ham away, Fulham at home. Burnley have Newcastle at home, Spurs away, Forest at home. So you'd say, Jordan, that Burnley have the toughest run in there?
I think so. And I think Luton have the nicest game because they're playing three teams, if I'm not mistaken, that aren't playing for anything at the moment. So
I guess West Ham are kind of playing for a competition.
Okay, yeah.
Spot. Yeah.
You'd take Luton's fixtures, I guess. I think Burnley will do it, actually. I think the momentum is with them. I think it will be Forest and Luton that end up through the trapdoor, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we don't know what will happen with... Forest are appealing, aren't they?
Yeah, we're due to find out this week. So they've lost 4 points. Will they get one or two back? Don't know. I don't really understand these appeals. I mean, there must be... Like, I don't really understand why Everton got points back. You know, they got their punishment... Then they appealed and then, okay, have 2 points back or whatever, 3 points back, whatever it was. Was it just that the independent tribunal or whatever made a mistake? Or I don't know. I should know and I don't. But
well, I don't know, and we should all probably know, but you know, it's not as interesting as actual football. But you kind of need the people deciding the appeal for Forest, you kind of need them to not know what the Premier League table is, right? You know, it's like finding jurors that have never heard of some incredibly famous murderer, right? You just need someone to go, I don't know what football is, but I can really make a judgment on how many points you should get back or not get back. Because if they make the decision and it instantly changes the league table in either way, then it doesn't feel like...
Could you maybe take the jurors and sort of lock them up for, I don't know, 72 hours, just being fired, random clips of games, random clips of us, of other football podcasts. So they become very disoriented and have absolutely no idea what's going on. Or actually just play this season's podcast so they have no idea what's going on.
They certainly won't know who Jan Bednarek is. That'll be as it. Do you know this person? A lineup with Vestergaard and Bednarek to see if you're allowed on the jury.
Or Fabianski and Areola.
Exactly. Villa 2, Chelsea 2. Chelsea are random. I think Villa will be disappointed, Jordan, won't they? They had a 2-goal lead. They could have lost it, of course. I'm still not quite sure why Chelsea were so annoyed that a VAR check for a really blatant push gave a really blatant push. I mean, that feels to me what VAR is about.
Yeah, I didn't get it either. They were massively clutching. But Villa are really good. Villa are really good, and I think they will get top four, and they will have deserved Champions League football next season. And it hurts me, but watching Aston Villa is a real pleasure. And I think that the job, we said it before in this podcast, that Emery's done. I thought they would have actually burned out by now. I thought the kind of March April period would be where they would tail off, and they haven't. So you know, fair play to them. I'm a massive fan of Jacob Ramsey, so I hope that he comes back next season and is back to what we saw last season. And that Rodgers player, he looks like another great find from Villa as well. So yeah, it wasn't a great result in the end for them, but it's looking like it's gonna end up being a very, very good season.
Yeah, everyone. Feel that, you know, they just have such a good lead on Tottenham now, Wilson, don't they, at Villa, even though Tottenham have, a couple of games to get close. And Tottenham's fixture list is Chelsea away, Liverpool away, City at home. That feels like Villa have got it now.
Yeah, they haven't quite, but they're definitely very strong favourites. I think they're just playing better than Tottenham at the minute as well. I think Tottenham look very fragile. I guess we've already done the Tottenham bit, but their fall off since that first 10 games, I know the first 10 games was not ever going to be sustainable. They have 26 points in the first 10 games. But it has been quite a sharp fall off. And I know there's been injuries. But yeah, I wouldn't, given the fixture list, I think Villa, one more win probably would be enough.
So Chelsea drew this game. While we're on Chelsea, their women lost 2-0 to Barcelona in the second leg of the Women's Champions League semi-final. Khadija Buchanan was sent off for two yellows, the second very soft. Emma Hayes said it was the worst decision in Women's Champions League history. And it did remind me that they got an incredibly soft penalty in the quarterfinals, I think last year against Lyon in the 128th minute, which could also be one of the worst decisions in Women's Champions League history. But Emma Hayes didn't say that about that particular incident. But it was really soft. I mean, I really feel for her because it was a really bad decision. They'd hit the post about a minute before. And, you know, those two moments could have really changed this game. And Barcelona's penalties to get the second goal was also soft. But it is worth listening to the Guardian Women's Football Weekly to find out if a panel of experts agree with Emma Hayes on that. But yeah, Chelsea won't win the Champions League. Still, of course, very much in the hunt for the WSL. That'll do for part two. Part three will begin in Bournemouth.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Another great win for Bournemouth, 3-0 over Brighton. They only had 3 points after their first nine games. Now they're 10th. 48 points is a record for them in the Premier League. Why did we ever doubt Sid, Barry? Or maybe you never did doubt Sid.
No, I was doubting Sid, I have to say. I was Sid skeptic, and I'd like to apologise. I should have known better. Yeah, they've got 42 points since the start of November, which I believe, according to a Match of the Day graphic, only the top three or four sides have bettered that rate of accumulation. Brighton seem to have just given up for the season. They haven't won any of their last six games, lost four, drawn two. I'm going to be interested to see what happens at Brighton during the summer, because I think Roberto De Zerbi might, A, he doesn't look like his heart's in the job anymore, and B, I think he might have irritated Tony Bloom, Brighton's owner, who is not a man you want to mess with. And if you go into a game of brinkmanship with him, as De Zerbi appeared to do earlier in the season, you're almost certainly going to lose, because Tony Bloom is famously a very, very good poker player. And I think De Zerbi had a good hand, which has weakened, and he played it badly. So I have a feeling he may not be the Brighton manager next season. But I'm sure they'll have someone interesting lined up to replace him if that is the case. But a really good performance by Bournemouth against Brighton in what was very much an on-the-beach derby between two clubs who are near the beach.
Just to build on Barry's point there about De Zerbi, I agree. And I mean, I've been an advocate of De Zerbi getting the United job next season, should that job become available. But I just wonder if the way that he's limping to the end of the season, I just wonder if other clubs now are just thinking, we're not quite sure if you are the guy, and if he's kind of killing himself with the way that he's performing there at Brighton, because it's not been a great second half of the season for De Zerbi. And also, I heard the crappiest stat over the weekend from this game that, it was the commentator said, Justin Cliver, that goal now means he scored more goals than his dad in the Premier League. I thought to myself, I don't remember Patrick Cliver scoring that many goals for Newcastle. So I checked, and Justin Cliver's on 7. And I just thought...
But it would be a really good stat for just people whose dads never played Premier League football. That would be more fun, wouldn't it?
You know, maybe.
Charlie Daniels' dad as a cabbie. And then, you know, Charlie Daniels' first goal in the Premier League. This now means he has more goals than his dad. God, you just draw it out all the time.
But he's never passed the knowledge.
Exactly. Well, that's interesting on De Zerbi, Wilson, isn't it? You sort of think, like, other clubs are smart enough to look at the job he has done as a whole rather than the last sort of couple of months here. But there is a danger. There was a point where, like, there were so many jobs open and he was a flavour of the month, and the way football works, that can change very quickly. That he could end up, as Barry says, pissing off Tony Bloom, losing this job and actually not getting one of the sort of actually really quite big jobs that he could have ended up getting.
Yeah, I mean... The way Brighton's form has collapsed, I think, is understandable given the injuries they've had, the youth of the players are now having to play, the fact they had the Europa League for the first time in their history, which, you know, quite apart from the physical strain on players, I think it's an emotional drain on fans. All of those are totally reasonable explanations. I think where De Zerbi might have cost himself is just his behaviour. You know, he doesn't look a man in control on the touchline. His post-match comments all seem to be about jockeying to get his next job, but he doesn't seem focused on the team now. And if certain players are starting to think, yeah, I'm not sure what my future is, and maybe not quite giving their all as he would have done at the beginning of the season, I think De Zerbi has to bear some of the responsibility for that. I don't think you should write him off for Brighton's results, but I think it's reasonable to say, is that the attitude, the behaviour of an elite manager, and maybe it's not.
Injuries for Brighton meant a Premier League start for 21-year-old Odell Afaya, the nephew of rugby league legend Martin, and 19-year-old striker Mark O'Mahony, who De Zerbi described this week as the new Evan Ferguson. Has Evan Ferguson done enough to get a new Evan Ferguson? Possibly. I mean, who knows? John says, not a question, but if you have time after and Bournemouth beat Brighton, you might like to mention Brighton's goal of the month for April competition consists of the Burnley own goal that rolled under their keeper's foot. And that is it. Everton beat Brentford 1-0. Safety confirmed for Everton with this win. And given, Barry, that Everton had that run of like 13 or 14 without a win, without the points deduction, they'd be level with Brighton, who that as we've just established, is actually no great chase. But anyway, you know, Dyche is a fun manager to have in the Premier League, but I don't know if we've sort of done him a disservice this season on what he's achieved given the upheaval at Goodison.
I would imagine it's been quite stressful for him. I mean, I don't think Dyche needs anyone to speak up for him because he's very good at speaking up for himself in post-match interviews. I think he's one of the better managers at doing post-match interviews, you know, whereas Erik ten Hag can come out and say, oh, we were brilliant in a game where they clearly weren't. Dyche can kind of gloss over bad performances and still sound like he isn't talking through his hat or not sound delusional. He's very well spoken. But, you know, Everton have won 3 games in a row at home. That was, you know, a nice quirk, I suppose, of the fixture generator. And, I mean, this game was... the first half of this game was horrifically bad. It was so bad. And I really felt sorry for Kelly Cates, and I can't remember who was punditing on Sky, but, like, the only thing they had to discuss at halftime was a Jared Brantwaite block from a Matthias Jensen shot. Where I think...
got 15 minutes of
this. Yeah, I think Christian Nurgard had nutmegged James Tarkowski to tee up Matthias Jensen for a shot, and Jared Brantwaite had blocked it. That was the highlight of the first half. And they were mugging furiously in the Sky studio. Going, is this all we've got? This is thin gruel. But, picked up a bit in the second half. Idrissa Gueye scored another crucial goal. He's not exactly prolific, but that's 2 in 3 games, I think. And Everton now officially safe. They were pretty safe anyway. Jordan Pickford made a couple of good saves. And Everton, they are the turd that will not flush. And I mean that in the nicest way possible.
Fulham Palace. All we need to talk about, Jordan, is the Jeffrey Schlupp finish, the goal of the day. I mean, I know you said Gvardiol's header was good, but it wasn't as good as Jeffrey Schlupp's banger, was it?
Probably not, no, probably not. It was a great strike. That's all I have to add.
Perfect. Huge weekend in the EFL. Leicester promoted to the Premier League. Ipswich need 4 points from two to be certain. That was after Leeds were hammered 4-0 by QPR, who are safe. Amazing work from Cifuentes to get them safe. Ipswich drew at Hull, who can steal the last playoff spot from West Brom. Huddersfield are basically down, along with Rotherham. It'll be between Birmingham, Plymouth, Sheffield Wednesday and Blackburn for who joins those two. In League One, Cambridge survive a far less stressful day than this time last season. We needed a point and play for a goalless draw at Port Vale in one of the least interesting football matches of all time. I mean, we could have done with a Jarrod Branthwaite block to make this game more interesting, to be honest. It didn't matter because Cheltenham and Burton both lost, so Cheltenham are relegated from League One. Derby promoted to the Championship, so the League One playoffs are Bolton v Barnsley and Peterborough versus Oxford. In League Two, automatic already confirmed for Stockport, Mansfield and Wrexham. Playoffs will be MK Dons versus Crawley and Doncaster versus Crewe. Gutting for Barrow, who'd been in the playoff spots for about 5 years. Colchester United survive. Sutton joined Forest Green in the National League. Consecutive relegations for Forest Green. Adam says, can you give a mention to Solihull Moors FC, please? Back-to-back trips to Wembley in the National League playoff final and then the FA Trophy Dreamland. Yeah, Bromley v Solihull Moors for a spot in League Two next Sunday. So yeah, a new team in the EFL was exciting. Stephen says, some words on the late and great Charlie the King Hurley would be wonderful. A player who my dad nor myself ever saw play. Granddad was lucky too, but somehow meant just as much to all three generations, something I think is common across Sunderland fans. Wilson, Barry, I'll start with you, Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle to think of another player who, you know, when did he finish playing? Sort of 69, I think he left for Bolton. And yeah, he's still universally regarded as Sunderland's greatest ever player. Yeah, I don't know if they still do, but certainly late 90s fans still sung his name. You still see people with Hurley 5 shirts. And the extraordinary thing is he didn't win anything. You know, he was the captain of the promotion winning team of 63-4, which fans of my dad's generation, I think, regard as being the best of all Sunderland teams. I mentioned him in my column on Sunday, and it turned out I could just name that 11. I didn't have to look it up. I checked, but Montgomery, Irwin, Ashurst, Harvey, Hurley, McNabb, Usher, Hurd, Sharkey, Crossan, Mulhall. And then Alan Brown left during the summer, went to Sheffield Wednesday, and things with a very Sunderland, in a very Sunderland way went bad quite quick. But Hurley was a centre-half. He was tough, big, but he was also a very elegant player, a very graceful player. Got, I don't know, 20-odd goals in just over 400 games for Sunderland. Would go forward for corners. But I think the reason he was so popular, and bearing in mind he was born in Cork and grew up in Millwall, so he had no local connection. I think the reason he meant so much was because he sort of embodied what Sunderland fans saw as their own best qualities, that he did have that resilience and that toughness, but also there was a grace there as well. So, yeah, very sad.
Yeah, I mean, I never saw him play, but he's the reason my dad was a Sunderland fan. My dad would have watched him play for Ireland when he was a student, when my dad was a student, not Charlie Hurley. Charlie Hurley was playing for Ireland in Dublin. I wouldn't imagine Sunderland would have been on TV in Ireland back in those days, if they even had TVs.
And the other sort of nice thing about him is that when Sunderland won the Cup in 73, he sort of has a walk-on part because he was the Reading manager who Sunderland beat in the fourth round. But every time he did come back, it was probably at once a season he came back. You know, if you knew he was going to be on the pitch at half-time, nobody went to get a pint. Everybody was there to sort of to hail him, because 30 years after he stopped playing, he was still the biggest hero we had.
Finally, an email from Danny on the subject of... we were talking about a team where all the fans were in fancy dress, but hurling like vicious abuse at the manager, but it sort of didn't quite land because they all looked ridiculous. Danny says, hi, Max, Barry and co. Your conversation about fans going to games in fancy dress reminded me of an incident on the final day of the 2013-14 season. A friend of mine had a spare ticket for Spurs Villa, so I tagged along, keeping my Leeds United allegiance to myself. Spurs beat Astoria Villa 3-0, and I caught the train back to Liverpool Street. While on the train, my attention was caught by a thick Brummie accent behind me. It went as follows. In the last month, I've lost my job. My girlfriend ran off with someone else. The Villa are shite. Everything is just shite. Curious to put a face to this embodiment of misery, I turned around to see said man with thick Brummy accent dressed in full Mr. Blobby outfit. 10 years on, it still raises a smile whenever I think about it. Keep up the good work and up the leads, Danny Brogan. Thank you, Danny.
Do we know for certain it wasn't Mr. Blobby? Because he kind of disappeared off the radar.
That's true. So, do you think all those things went wrong for Mr. Blobby at the same time? Anyway, you know, I hope wherever he is, I hope Blobby is doing tremendously well. When he gets old, Blobby, because he was quite, it was quite a lot of his life was about movement, wasn't it? So hopefully he's still sort of quite agile, because once he's lost that, it'll be a sort of sad time. It's a bit old, Mr. Blobby. Anyway, that'll do for today. Thank you, Jordan.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you, Barry.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Wilson.
Cheers, thank you.
Football Weekly is produced by Silas Gray. Our executive producer is Josh Kelly. We'll be back on Wednesday after the first Champions League semi-final.
This is The Guardian.